You're listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Katie Frankowitz, and I'll soon be joined by my co-host, Skylar Butenshin. It's Monday, April 28th. It's been 4 months since Oregon's state forester resigned. OPB's April Ehrlich reports it could take months more to find a replacement.
The state forester leads the Oregon Department of Forestry and oversees wildland firefighting, logging, and environmental regulations. Former forester Cal Mukumoto resigned after an expensive wildfire season plunged the department into a deficit and forced lawmakers into a special session to fast-track funds. The Board of Forestry will choose Mukumoto's replacement if lawmakers don't pass a bill that would transfer that power to Governor Tina Kotek. During its most recent meeting, the board discussed keeping candidates' names from the public until it chose a new forester. Board Chair Jim Kelly said making candidates' names public might discourage them from applying.
I think we owe it to the people of Oregon to have a national search and to truly have the most qualified people.
Administrative officials said recruitment could take another 2 to 4 months. I'm April Ehrlich reporting.
Columbia Memorial Hospital in Astoria is in the middle of an estimated $300 million expansion project. The hospital had landed a $20 million federal grant through a program run by the Federal Emergency Management Agency intended to help communities prepare for natural disasters. The hospital planned to use the money to pay for resiliency measures like a vertical evacuation staircase and other components meant to protect people in case of an earthquake or tsunami. But earlier this month, the Trump administration ended the program, and with it, the hospital's grant. Last week, U.S. Representative Suzanne Bonamici told local leaders she's fighting to restore the grant program.
This is saving lives and property. And so the more we can convince the administration that, number one, these are dollars that have already been committed and projects underway, but also that, you know, this is not a political issue. This is exactly what FEMA should be doing and could be doing.
Bonamici says there is a relatively new bipartisan call to restore the FEMA grant program. The hospital expansion project in Astoria already has broad bipartisan support at the local, state, and federal level. Columbia Memorial CEO Eric Thorson told KMUN there are other funding strategies the hospital continues to explore, including moving ahead with a $6 million ask to the Oregon legislature. The hospital has also applied for additional grants and is looking at how it can ramp up fundraising efforts.
Timing is actually on our side, which I think is a very positive thing. So we borrowed the majority of the funds necessary for the construction, so we can utilize those funds as we're going through the construction while we're trying to raise or figure out how we plug basically the $20 million hole. So in my mind, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5 years to figure out how to raise this money the BRIC grant kind of took away.
It's a risk, but one Thorson believes the hospital could weather.
I'm Skylar Butenshin. In the upcoming May election, the Neocony School District will look to voters to support an operations levy that would generate up to $2 million annually to bolster the district's budget. Neocony schools have historically relied on property taxes, timber revenue, and grants from the state and federal governments for its funding. But over the last 2 years, timber revenues have substantially declined. Neocony Superintendent Tyler Reed says the decline is mostly due to the State Habitat Conservation Plan passed by the Oregon Board of Forestry last year, which placed increased restrictions on timber harvests in state forests. If approved, Neocony school leaders say the levy would allow the district to limit cuts to many programs, including its free preschool offerings, the continued operation of 2 elementary schools, and the district's variety of dual-credit classes and club opportunities. More information on the proposed levy can be found at nknsd.org/levy. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
A fatal crash shut down Highway 30 near Klatskanai Saturday afternoon. A preliminary investigation by the Oregon State Police indicates 48-year-old Darren James McLeod, a Klatskanai resident, was traveling eastbound on the highway when he crossed the center line into oncoming traffic. His Volkswagen Jetta crashed head-on into a Ford pickup that was hauling a camping trailer. McLeod was declared dead at the scene. The driver of the pickup, 63-year-old Hammond resident Michael Todd Olson, suffered minor injuries and did not need to be taken to a hospital. The highway was closed for about 4.5 hours.
Washington lawmakers just wrapped up the legislative session in Olympia. Another group was also working overtime, lobbyists. KUOW's Scott Greenstone reports on the explosive growth in Washington state lobbying.
There were nearly 1,000 lobbyists registered in Washington state last year, more than 6 for every 1 lawmaker. This year, lobbyists crowded outside the wings of the state house and senate during important votes. They chilled by the big sundial between the legislative offices, waiting for lawmakers.
I try not to chase them down.
Chester Baldwin stood outside a Senate committee hearing wearing a suit and a Jerry Garcia tie.
And sometimes their office will be like, if you're in this hallway at this time, you can catch them and walk to their next hearing.
Baldwin lobbies for wineries, plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors, and landlord groups. Not all lobbyists are full-time, but he has been since the pandemic, when his lobbying business went through the roof. In the last decade, money spent lobbying Washington legislators has more than doubled, a more dramatic and steady rise than other states that track lobbying money. Brendan Glavin is director of Insights for Open Secrets, a nonprofit that tracks this spending.
There's more money coming in. There's more opportunity for lobbyists to get in there and make money.
Glavin says the focus on states is thanks to congressional deadlock. Lobbies go where they can get stuff done, or to stop stuff they don't want done. Which brings us back to that hallway in Olympia. For years, Chester Baldwin has been fighting legislation that would regulate landlords, a limit on how much they can raise the rent annually. This year, rent caps are closer than ever to passing. Landlords Baldwin represents say if that happens, they're leaving the state.
There is this issue of this cap that is somewhere that we just very much disagree on what the policy.
My mom deserves to know what she's going to pay for rent every year so that she can budget appropriately. And many people on fixed income, particularly like my mom, deserve that same stability.
That's Senator Yasmin Trudeau, a Tacoma Democrat and a big supporter of the rent cap. She doesn't like how landlords have been lobbying around it.
There hasn't been any conversations, willing conversations or negotiations from the landlord side. Not one. And I haven't seen one iota of bend or give from the landlords ever.
This bill is about the cap in the bill. It's not about the rest of the bill. We could work on the rest of the policy.
The cap is the stability.
Chester Baldwin is painfully aware that lobbyist is among the most hated jobs in America. In January, a Gallup survey found 68% of respondents had low or very low opinions of them. Their net favorability was lower even than members of Congress and TV reporters. Corporate lobbying is probably the most hated. Amazon, DoorDash, they're huge spenders in Washington. Your delivery fees might pay for a lobbyist. Maybe pennies from your rent go into pockets like Chester Baldwin's, but your taxes probably also pay a lobbyist. 85 cities and all 39 counties in Washington hire lobbyists, trying to do things like raise your property taxes.
You know, I don't think lobbyists are inherently always evil.
Dan Butler is a poli-sci professor at Washington University in St. Louis.
Among other things, they provide information. We expect our legislators to be voting on all sorts of topics about which they know very little.
Thousands of bills are introduced every year dealing with everything from fisheries to highways to dental plans. Lobbyists represent trade associations with expertise on those things and incentives, of course, to stop bills. And while Butler's found no evidence that lobbying changes lawmakers' votes, sometimes they don't need to. There are hundreds of bills every year the legislature just runs out of time to vote on. And Butler's found lobbying definitely influences what they don't make time for.
Lobbying's not changing how people vote on a given issue, but it's changing whether it gets a vote. And that's an important power in American politics.
Now, when it comes to rent caps, it did come up for a vote, but the House and Senate are still figuring out if they can pass a cap they both agree on. Chester Baldwin and lobbyists for the bill are working it down to the wire. I'm Scott Greenstone reporting.
After this story was reported and produced, Washington lawmakers did indeed strike a compromise deal on a rent caps proposal. You just listened to KMUN News with the local and regional news produced by your community radio station, KMUN 91.9 FM. For even more news, visit kmun.org/news. You can also send news tips and story ideas to news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.